Welcome to the Live No Weather Radio Show. My name is Jeff Boyne. I'm one of the forecasters here at the National Weather Service in La Crosse. And just wanted to welcome you to our show. This is our 10th year of doing these shows. We try to do them at least 2 to 3 times a year. With the phones, if you do call in tonight, you'll be probably talking to Dan Jones. You also have the option of emailing your questions in to either myself, jeff.boyne@noaa.gov, or you can also use our instant message link up over on the left-hand column of the webpage towards the top. You can use that option, too. Our phone numbers here tonight for the La Crosse area is area code 608-782-1894. Then press 1 to get to a live person. For Rochester, Minnesota, the phone number is 507-289-1419, and also press 1 to get to a live person. For those, we also like to welcome those who are possibly listening online through the live stream page, and we'd like to thank you for our sponsors out there that are providing that service. Tonight's show, we'll be talking for the next hour, reviewing the windstorm of October 26th, 27th, just last week. Then we'll do a quick talk about Kolkaraz, what is it, and what sort of things you can expect from it. Then we'll discuss what is La Nina. That leads us into our winter 2010-11 outlook. And then from there, we'll actually go in and look at the Winter Weather Awareness Day and also week. So we'll look into those topics. So we'll begin the show right now talking about the wind event of last week. An area low pressure moved into the Washington State, Oregon, back on Monday of last week, and that storm system moved rapidly into the southern plains. The low slowly intensified as it came through Kansas, continued to intensify as it moved through northwest Iowa, and then moved up into central Minnesota, continuing to move northward. Another low pressure system actually came out across South Dakota and then moved up towards the northeast part of North Dakota, and those two low pressure systems actually intensified together, rapidly deepening the low pressure system. The low pressure system, as it moved north, produced showers and thunderstorm activity across the area. Rainfall amounts about 1/2 an inch to a few places saw up to an inch. More importantly was, of course, the central pressure of the low pressure system, which quickly fell through the day and actually right on through the night. Low pressure deepened to a new Minnesota state record at Big Fork, Minnesota. The pressure fell to 955.2 millibars, which is equivalent to 28.21 inches of mercury. And that occurred at 5:13 during the afternoon of October 26th. There was some rumors out there that was the lowest pressure in the lower 48. Since then, in the past week or so, we've done more research and discovered that there's at least two other storms that did have deeper low pressures, and they were over on the East Coast. One was up in Maine. The other one was out towards Massachusetts. I take back, it was over in New York. And those both had a little lower pressure than this one. Not by much, a couple millibars, a couple inches, about 3 millibars deeper, and they were about probably about 1/10 of an inch lower on the mercury when adjusted to sea level. So there were deeper storms that did occur, and those were early in the 1900s. So the rumors out there that this is the deepest low-pressure system ever in the lower 48 were false right now. But it also set a low pressure system, I mean a low barometric pressure reading for Wisconsin, too. It wasn't quite as low as what it was over in Minnesota. That occurred at Superior, Wisconsin. That was 961.3 millibars, which is equivalent to 28.39 inches of mercury. That occurred at 11:15 a.m. on October 26th. here locally at La Crosse. We also set a new barometric pressure record here locally. The pressure fell to 28.685, and this just barely beat the previous record, which was 28.69 inches of mercury. Looking at millibars, it was like 0.2 of an inch millibar difference. The this one was 971.4 millibars. The previous one was 971.6. And the previous record was back in November 10th of 1998. So there was a little lower pressure, slightly lower this one. Over in Rochester, the barometric pressure was the second lowest, or actually the third lowest, pardon me. And that occurred at 6:54 in the morning. The pressure fell to 972.9 millibars, which is 28.73 inches of mercury. And that's finished third, as I said. The previous storms that did were a little lower than that was the November 10th, 1998 storm, which was right over top of them with 28.49 inches or 964.8 millibars. And also the one that occurred on January 11th, 1975. And that one was 28.67 inches or 971.1 millibars. So that basically tells us how deep the low-pressure system is. One thing about this storm was the wind speeds were strong, but they weren't necessarily quite as strong as what we saw in the 98 storm or what we saw back in the May 5th, 1950 storm. They weren't quite as deep as far as wind speeds in those cases. In both storms, we actually had wind speeds getting up into the gusting up into the 80 to 100 mile per hour range with sustained winds ranging, we're pretty much close to 60 miles an hour at times in both of those previous storms. The reason why there wasn't as much wind with this event was there typically you see a strong high pressure system come into the area in the wake of these low pressure systems, and that helps intensify the pressure gradient, and that's just basically the difference between pressures from the high pressure system to the low pressure system. And when you have a very tight difference between those two, let's say you have a fairly strong high coming in behind a strong low pressure system, the pressure gradient between the two are fairly deep, and the winds blow from high pressure to low pressure, so you're actually intensifying those winds trying to blow into the low. If the low is deepening, it's just like digging into a pile of dry sand, trying to dig into it. As you're trying to dig out a hole, the sand rapidly tries to fill back into that area. So the tighter your pressure gradient, the more the winds are blowing into the area. And that's the reason why we didn't quite see quite as strong winds as we saw with that one, but we still saw the rather impressive winds out of this area. The two-day average winds for Rochester, for example, you look at it, basically their average wind speed for the 2 days was 29.8 miles an hour, and this easily surpassed the previous high of just 22.6 miles an hour back on October 9th and 10th of 1993, which is really impressive when you think about it. Rochester is one of the windiest cities in the United, at least the lower 48, it's in the top 10 as far as wind speeds. And to blow a record like that so far away, that's just amazing, really. Here at La Crosse at the airport, the average two-day wind speed was 21.6 miles an hour. And the only other wind storms that did surpass, and the records go back into the 1930, was the May 5th and 6th 1950 storm, which the average was 23.9 miles an hour, and the April 13th and 14th storm back in 1964, and that was 23.8 miles an hour. So they're slightly strong, but the storm was very impressive as far as that goes. Sustained winds were generally in the 35 to up to about 40, 45 miles an hour, and we had wind gusts at Stacyville, Iowa, up to 88 miles an hour. Mount Sterling, Wisconsin, had 70 miles an hour. La Crosse, 4 miles southeast of the thing, was 69 miles an hour. Some of the strongest winds actually occurred from the late, during the overnight hours, in the early morning hours of October 27th. That's when the strongest winds actually occurred across the area. We had higher sustained winds the previous day, but the higher wind gust was more common on the 27th. The storm not only affected us locally, but it also affected the entire, much of the eastern part of the country. A squall line developed back in eastern Kansas and northeast Oklahoma, and that raced across the Ohio River Valley and parts of the Tennessee River Valley right on into West Virginia and western Pennsylvania. Lots of wind damage reports through that entire area. Strong winds were also reported clear back into the western portions of the Dakotas, western Nebraska, and extended right up into northern lower Michigan and eastern upper Michigan. So there's a fairly extensive storm here. As far as that's concerned, there was lots of severe weather reports, lots of wind damage reports through that, as I said, basically from Kansas right on into Pennsylvania and parts of West Virginia. So that was very impressive as far as storms go. In addition, there's a band of accumulating snow that developed from eastern Montana into North Dakota and then extended into parts of central and northeast Minnesota. The orientation of the accumulating snow was a bit unusual in that it occurred generally to the south and even southeast of the low. Most winter storms, the accumulating snow will usually fall to the left of the low track and generally to the north and northwest. This low was powerful enough to pull warmer air around and north of the and northwest of the low pressure system. And as a result, the colder actually air was found mainly south and side of the low. Snow amounts were largely under 6 inches and measuring was very difficult just due to the strong winds. The heaviest snow, 6 to 9 inches, excluding the Rocky Mountains, were northwest of Duluth near Twig and also in northern North Dakota. Parts of North Dakota were also under blizzard warnings for this storm. So that gives you an idea basically how expansive this storm was and what sort of severe weather we ended up seeing from it. It was a fairly damaging storm, one that will be remembered for a long time to come. Going to take a quick break. We will be back in about 5 minutes. We'll let the radio cycle go here a little bit. We'll be back on the air about 7:15. Again, the phone numbers, if you'd like to call us with any weather questions that you may have, for La Crosse, the phone number is 608-782-1894. For the Rochester area, it's 507-289-1419. You can also email me at jff.boyne@noaa.gov. That's noaa.gov. And also on our webpage over in the left-hand menu, towards the top of the left-hand menu bar, there is actually a link there where you can send a work message into us, and we will answer any of those questions that you may have, whether it's about our topics or any other weather questions that you may have. Our next subject at 7:15, we'll be talking about kookaras and what it is. Welcome back to our live NOAA Weather Radio Show. This is Jeff Boyne again, one of the forecasters here at the National Weather Service Office here in La Crosse, Wisconsin, and just wanted to start the second part of our show tonight. We're going to be talking about kookaras. First, before I start talking about kookaras, I want to remind you of our phone numbers here. For those who have any weather questions whatsoever, you can call us at in the La Crosse area at 608-782-1894 and over in Rochester, 507-289-1419. Press 1 after either one of those phone numbers to get to a live person. And Dan Jones will be gladly able to write down those questions, and we'll answer them on the air, and also he might be able to answer the questions too. So just want to remind you there, and also you can email me at jff.boyne@noaa.gov, and also you can use the link over in the left-hand menu bar to instant message us with any questions that you would have. So those are ways to reach us. Now we'll start going back into our second topic of the show. We're going to be talking about COCRAS here. What exactly is COCRAS? COCRAS is an acronym for the Community Collaborative Rain, Hail, and Snow Network. COCRAS is a unique, nonprofit, community-based network of volunteers of all ages and backgrounds, working together to measure and map precipitation such as rain, hail, and snow. They use it by using low-cost measurement tools such as rain gauges, also hail pads. And we want to do training as far as those people who might be interested in measuring any of those three elements daily. It's become a national, all 50 states right now are involved with COCRAS right now. The network originated with the Colorado Climate Center in Colorado State back in 1998, and this was in thanks part to the Fort Collins flood a year prior to that. And that flood, about 2 to 3 inches fell in Fort Collins, and all of a sudden they had a major flash flood occur. 8 to 11 inches of rain fell into the mountain areas and caused major flash flooding in Fort Collins. After that flood, they realized that the networks, as far as precipitation wasn't widespread enough to help catch these flash floods. So they decided to start their own network of volunteer rain observers to help the Weather Service help as they turn around and measure those readings given to the Weather Service. We would use it to help incorporate these into our warnings and make more accurate warnings and get some time, lead time out for people in the event of a flash flood. So that's the reason why we had COCRAS. Now, anybody can help with this project, young, old, in between, whatever. Some of our youngest observers were about 6 years old, and we have observers clear up into their 90s reporting. This is basically to supplement our other rainfall networks that we do have. Basically, you report daily. You enter it into a website and send it out to us. Usually, we like to have people report somewhere between 7 and 9 o'clock in the morning so we can get that. And if there's heavy rains that are occurring any other time, you can special message us through the website that there's heavier rain falling, and it helps us out. Our Doppler radar is able to detect rainfall amounts, but at times it's great to have ground truth to go along with those. Is the radar actually estimating correctly? Is it estimating hail inside? So we're trying to figure out that. So those reports help us a great deal as far as what's going on. Now, COCRAS is just not used by us. It's used by hydrologists, emergency managers, city utilities that monitor water supply, water conservation, stormwater. Insurance adjusters use the website, USDA. Engineers, mosquito control, ranchers, farmers, and also those with outdoor and recreational interest, teachers, students, and even your neighbors in your own community use this data to help themselves out and find out how much rain fell during a particular time period. So you're helping out your neighbors by joining this network. So that's one of the best things. Also, the other thing is you're helping fill in pieces where we're in between observations where we don't have a lot of things going on. Rainfall is there can be such a huge difference within a small little area as far as rainfall amounts go in between observations. And this can be very important as far as determining whether we need to issue a urban and small stream flood advisory or whether we need to issue a flash flood warning to alert you what's going on. And also, it helps out the media, too, as far as trying to get their information out. Once we issue the warning, of course, they're letting you know what's going on as far as what's happening there. So if I've interested you at all as far as possibly joining COCRAS, all three of our states here, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, as I said, all 50 states in the country are involved with this program right now, and we're actively recruiting new observers here right now. We do have a training session actually coming up in the mid-November here, Tuesday, November 16th at 7 o'clock at the Heinz Center or University Center in Rochester at 1926 College View Road, Southeast Rochester, Minnesota, and that begins at 7 o'clock. We're going to be talking about more about Kokoroz, how to set up your equipment, why you should join, measuring, how to measure the precipitation, how to measure the snow depth. Snow depth is actually very important as we get later in the season as far as how much potential there could be for springtime flooding, so you're helping your neighbors that live along rivers, too. We'll also go over the website a little bit more, how to enter the data in. It's really simple. I've actually been doing it myself for the last 3 years. If you'd like some more information, you either can email me at jff.bone@noaa.gov, or Tim Helbuck is going to be doing the one over in Rochester there. His email is timothy.j.halbach@noaa.gov. And if I went too fast, on our website, down under previous news and stuff like that, that link down there at the bottom, you'll be able to find more on that old story there that Tim put up about this training opportunity that we're going to have over in Rochester. And also, we're going to be looking to do training elsewhere across our area in the upcoming months. So be alert for additional training sessions that we will be having on this one. We hope that if you're interested at all in weather, that you'll take the time and possibly attend one of these trainings and also volunteer for this new network. So I would like to take another break here. We'll be back at about 7:25. I'm just going to go check emails real quick, see if there's any questions that have come in. Again, if you have any weather questions, you can either phone us. La Crosse is 608-782-1894, press 1. Rochester is 507-289-1419. You can also instant message us off our webpage, off the left-hand menu bar right up towards the top. And also you can just email me at jff.bone@noaa.gov. When I come back, we're going to be talking about La Nina. What is La Nina? Welcome back to our live NOAA Weather Radio show. My name is Jeff Boyne, one of the forecasters here at the National Weather Service in La Crosse. And I'd like to welcome you back to our show. This next topic we're going to be talking about is what is La Nina. Before I go into that topic, we're going to give out those phone numbers again. So far, we haven't really had much response on the phone, so or even through email. So if you have any weather questions out there, here's a golden opportunity to ask a meteorologist and get those questions answered. The phone number for La Crosse is 608-782-1894. The phone number for Rochester is 507-289-1419. You can press 1 to get to a live person. Another way to get a hold of us, you can instant message us using the submit report over on the left-hand side of our menu of our webpage, which is weather.gov/lacrosse. And as I said, over in the left-hand menu, there's a submit report button. It's the third link down on the left-hand column, and you can do that to get a report to us, or you can also email me through the web story, which is jff.bone@noaa.gov. And those are three options that you can use to get a hold of us that way. So what exactly is La Nina? You've been hearing little bits about it over the last couple of months here as it's developed. La Nina basically refers to a persistent colder than normal sea surface temperature anomalies that occur across the central and eastern equatorial Pacific between 170 degrees west to about 120 degrees west longitude and about 5 degrees north and south latitude from the equator. La Nina is part of the phenomenon called the El Nino Southern Oscillation, or what we call ENSO. basically is an oscillation. That means it's basically a motion that repeats itself over and over again. The ensole total period going back and forth between El Niño and La Niña is about a 3 to 7 year period usually. Its opposite counterpart, El Niño, is much better known, and that is warmer than normal sea surface temperature anomalies over the same equatorial waters. El Niño basically got its story pretty much was always known as a phenomenon along the Peru coast because it typically tended to occur when right around Christmas time. So the Christ child is where it came from. El Niño basically being the child, the boy child in Spanish, and referring to the Christ child. And the Peruvians were basically fishermen along that coast. So they go out and go after anchovies. When the waters were cold, the anchovy fishing was great. When the warm waters started coming in, fish would actually get poor. They'd go find some colder waters elsewhere, off way away from the Peru coast, so the fishing got rather poor. So that's where El Niño basically got its roots. Well, La Niña, being colder than normal waters, actually ends up being great for anchovies. They had great fishing. And the importance of the sea surface temperatures being different during these time things is basically they dictate where the tropical thunderstorms are going to be developed and also be most persistent. Thunderstorms thrive over warm ocean waters in the same way as tropical storms and also hurricanes. During La Niña events, the warmest ocean waters are usually confined to the western equatorial Pacific region. Therefore, this is the preferred placement for these tropical thunderstorms during the northern hemisphere's cold season. And it actually even extends a little bit more than that. We always say the northern hemisphere cold season or our winter and fall. A lot of times during La Niña, you'll actually start seeing it develop even into the spring and summer months. This one, for example, developed quickly during the late spring and into the summer. And usually there's a little bit of lag before the atmosphere will actually catch up with the thunderstorm activity and start feeling the effects. So this La Niña really started to get in earnest as we get into mid to late summer and has been affecting our weather right on through the fall here. We've been seeing a very typical, what we would call a La Niña here, with the Septembers can go either which way as far as temperatures go. A lot of times here in La Crosse, we'll end up being cooler than normal a little bit. There's a tendency in September for temperatures to be cooler than normal. And this is basically mainly because of the high-pressure system. Ridge is off to the west of us, and Rochester, Minnesota sees a little bit better chances of seeing above-normal temperatures in September. As we get into the October and November, about 80% of them are warmer than normal. It's very typical to see warmer than normal temperatures during these months, and this warmer than normal temperatures will actually continue to linger right on into December. And by the time you get towards January, usually that's more of a transition month where we can actually go either warmer or colder than normal. And by the time you get into February, March, and sometimes even into April, you'll see colder than normal temperatures. By the time the winter's over with, and we're all tired of winter, that's typically when we see our coldest temperatures occur with La Niña. And then basically, precipitation a lot of times is dependent as far as what goes on there, as far as what it was. La Niña also tend to affect temperatures and stuff like that. When a weak and moderate La Niñas, usually the area is colder than normal. During strong La Niñas, usually we see warmer than normal temperatures. It can also affect storm tracks. The stronger the La Niña, the farther to the northwest the storm track will get. That was the biggest case back 2 winters ago, during the 2007-08 La Niña. Basically, that ended up was a moderate La Niña, and then it actually ended up bringing warmer the storm track up in the southern Wisconsin, eastern parts of Wisconsin, and they had record snowfalls from it. Some places got up into the 80 to 100-inch range off that one, so it does affect that parts of it. That's the reason why it's so important for us. La Nina is typically average about 15.4 months, and that's longer than a typical El Nino, which averages about 9.5 months. Since 1950, the longest La Nina was 37 months, and that was from the spring of 1973 through the spring of 1976. Meanwhile, the longest El Nino was 18 months, and this ran from the summer of 1986 through the early spring of 1988. So that's where La Ninas tend to last longer. They're colder than normal water temperatures. Now, the strength of a La Nina, as I talked earlier, is very important, is that weak La Ninas is when the anomalies are ranging from just a half degree to 0.9 degrees Celsius below normal in those waters that I mentioned before. A moderate La Nina is basically 1 to 1.4 degrees centigrade warmer. And a strong one is basically 1.5 degrees or colder than normal. So, as you can see, the strength is highly dependent on how cold those waters get. And also, those cold waters basically also tend to affect where the coldest air is felt around the country. And we'll get a little bit more into that as we get towards the winter outlook part of this talk. So that's what La Nina is. And we're actually in it right now. It's fairly strong La Nina, this one is. There's some questions when you look out at the models, whether it's going to stay strong or not. It has weakened in the last two to three weeks a little bit. But there are signs out there that we're going to see another intensification of this La Nina probably sometime next week, really, and that's going to be affecting us. And you're going to say, well, what can happen when you get thunderstorms clear over in the western part of the Pacific? How in the world can that affect what's going on here locally? And that's really a good question. But what it ends up being is these thunderstorms tend up, the energy ends up getting shifted northward, eventually into the mid-latitudes, and that greatly affects where our upper-level ridges end up and where our troughs of low pressure end up, and that actually affects where the jet stream's located. And if you're on the north side of the jet stream, you're colder than normal. If you're on the south side, you tend to be warmer than normal. That's the reason why it tends to affect us here. And that's the reason why we're so interested as far as what goes on out across that part of the world, as far as where the thunderstorm activity is, everything else. And as I said earlier, there's been a lot of talk that it mainly affects the winter months. We've done some statistical studies here at the office and have found that there are signals that occur besides the winter months as far as signals go, and they can affect all four seasons at one time or another out there at the end. So basically, it's a lot of things that we need to keep interest of what's going on as far as that's concerned. I'm going to take a five-minute break here. We will be back at about 7:45 or so. We'll be back around that time period here. We're going to talk about the winter outlook when I return a little bit. And as I said, that La Nina is greatly affecting what's going to happen this upcoming winter. And before I leave, we're going to be, I'll give you the phone numbers once again. Phone number, La Crosse, 608-782-1894. And for Rochester, 507-289-1419. Press 1 to get to a live person. You can also get to us through submit a report off our webpage over in the left-hand side, which is weather.gov/lacrosse, and you get to us that way, or you can email me at jff.bonne@noaa.gov. Again, we'd love to hear any questions, any comments about the show, things that you may want us to talk about in the future. Even that would be something that we'd be interested in doing sometime in 2011 or so when we go to our 11th year of doing these shows. If you know another format which we could possibly use that would suit you better, just let us know. Maybe we can incorporate that even. I'll be back again at 7:45. Just going to go check email, make sure that no questions are sitting in my email box, and we'll be back then. Welcome back to the Live No Weather Radio Show. Just want to let you know how you can answer any questions that you might have. Our phone number is La Crosse is 608-782-1894. Rochester is 507-289-1419. Press 1 to get to a live person, either phone number. You can also get a hold of us off our webpage, weather.gov/lacrosse. And all you have to do is just basically use the left-hand menu bar and submit a report. And I think it's the third link over on the left-hand side. Again, you can also email me at jff.byne@noaa.gov. And those are three options as far as getting a hold of us with any weather questions that you might have. As I said, we'd also appreciate any suggestions in improving the show. Feature topics that you'd like discussed, we're open to that too. And also, if you know any other formats that might come across as far as trying to get more respondents out there, we'd like to hear that too. So we're all open for changing things as we go on as the technology is out there, we know, and improving the show. And we'd like to continue it into 2011 and many years to come with this one. Just to get to our next topic, what does this winter have in store for the U.S. as the La Nina strengthens? The Pacific Northwest should brace for colder and wetter than average winter, while the southern and southeast United States will be warmer and drier than average, as this moderate to strong La Nina will be dominant factor for the influence in the weather across much of the country this upcoming winter. As we stated in the last segment, La Nina is associated with cooler than normal water temperatures in the equatorial Pacific. Another common term that I didn't go over in the last segment was La Nina is also sometimes called El Viejo, which is Spanish for the old man, where La Nina is the female child. So it's sort of another name for the La Nina phenomenon. Expect wetter than normal conditions, basically from Arkansas northwestward, northeastward into the lower Great Lakes. They should see the wetter than normal conditions, and of course drier than normal across the southern U.S. And there will probably be drought conditions as we get later into the winter with less and less precipitation down across the southern U.S. So it's going to be fairly warm and also dry down there. So we expect to see worsening drought conditions down in the southern and southeast United States. So that's where we're planning on seeing the worst of it as far as that's concerned. Colder than normal temperatures will probably be seen basically along the west coast, continuing into the intermountain regions, and then extending up into northern portions of Minnesota. Here locally, we're basically our winter, as most people know, our winter outlook basically is equal chances for above, below, and near normal. And some people think that's basically not a good forecast. However, when considering the uncertainty exactly as far as how strong this La Nina is, it actually is a good forecast in a way. I'll tell you the reasons why for that is that I've been looking at it for quite a while, and one of the reasons is if we're in a moderate La Nina, most of the area is colder than normal. That's simple as that. That's usually the case. Back in the 1950s to 1970s, when the last negative Pacific decadal oscillation, which we're in now, a majority of those winters were colder than normal. A good chunk of them were colder than normal. However, if you look at the strong La Ninas, and there's only been four of them since 1950, so it's a small database, they've been near to above normal. temperatures. So if this ends up being stronger than normal, well, we're going to see warmer than normal temperatures up in this area. Still going to be cold for winter. Average temperatures for La Crosse is right around 20 degrees and about 16 degrees over in Rochester, and that's the average of the high and low temperatures. So it's still going to be, we're still going to deal with cold temperatures, but also we tend to also going to probably see some warm time, warm temperatures along the way. And that was very common what we saw in the last La Nina, too. Remember, basically, especially over in the eastern parts of Wisconsin and the southern parts of Wisconsin, they had quite a bit of snow in the month of December. And then all of a sudden, right around early January, all of a sudden a rapid warm-up occurred. Most of the snow melted, and there was a tornado that occurred over in southeastern Wisconsin. First one since to occur in January since 1967, which was also a La Nina year. So you can see some very interesting weather when La Ninas occur. And due to the uncertainty, we're sort of caught in the middle where it usually is colder than normal across northern parts of Minnesota and western parts of Minnesota back into the Dakotas. Regardless what the intensity of La Nina, usually they are colder than normal. A majority of them are colder than normal. Meanwhile, to our south and to our east, they're usually warmer than normal. So we're sort of caught in that transition zone between the two, and we'll probably be waffling back and forth between the one. With December is typically near to above normal. January is sort of in that transition area, either above or below, and February is colder than normal. It all comes down to basically how long of a period are you colder than normal and how long a period are you warmer than normal. What is going to be when? Is December going to be averaging much warmer than normal, and then you get maybe not quite as cold in February, then you end up with a warmer than normal winter? Or let's say the opposite occurs, where all of a sudden December isn't quite as warm as what it sometimes is, and February's colder than normal, your winter is colder than normal. So, as I said, it could go either way as far as temperatures go right now. But if it ends up being a strong La Nina, basically probably near to above normal temperatures, if it's slightly weaker than forecasted, look more towards the near to below normal temperatures. So it's all going to come down to that intensity of La Nina. And the intensity of La Nina is also important in how much snow we're going to see. If you look at the four warmest La Ninas, or strongest La Ninas, snow was near to below normal snow for the winter. And that is tended to occur in all four of them. Meanwhile, if you end up with a moderate La Nina, sometimes you end up seeing a little bit more snow because the storm track has shifted northward. Rochester in the last La Nina ended up seeing below normal snowfall. Meanwhile, La Crosse and areas to the east saw above normal snow. So it was a very active winter with lots and lots of storms coming up into the area. We tended to see quite a period of bouts of cold weather during the La Nina, but as I said, we saw areas where we warmed up enough to melt off the snow on a couple of occasions during that winter. So it's going to be a lot of things that's going on there. Some wild cards that we're going to have to watch out for this winter. The North Atlantic Oscillation. Last winter, that was a very significant factor out there. It was one of the strongest North Atlantic Oscillations that we have records for, and that dates clear back into the 1800s. And that, in addition to strongest and warmest waters of the El Niño fading back towards the international dateline, as we thought might potentially happen, we ended up seeing below normal temperatures last winter. And many people thought it was going to be above normal winter because of El Niño. But that was the two wild cards that came in. The Pacific Decadal Oscillation, which kept the warm waters back towards the eastern, back across the, towards the international dateline and over towards us. Off the North Atlantic, basically we had a nice trough over there, which basically kept us in cold air for much of the winter. We kept our snowpack for much of that winter, right on into, until about March, and then all of a sudden we turned warm, and snow shut off, basically, and there was hardly any snow, really, in February and March last year. Actually, there was no snow at all in March at many locations, and warmer than normal. So So there's a lot of differences. With this being La Nina, I would expect probably to see colder than normal temperatures by the time we get into February and into March. So that'll be it. As we get into the spring, it's going to be a slower start to probably the growing season a little bit. So like last year, most farmers were able to get out there in April and starting things. This year probably is going to be different than that. May is a lot of times in La Ninas. If this La Nina happens to continue a little bit more, tend to be wetter than normal, and it also tends to bring slightly cooler than normal temperatures too. So this is going to be an interesting one. It's probably going to be a flip of what happened last year as far as the growing season, at least the beginning part of the growing season next spring. So we'll see how that goes. First of all, before wrapping up the show, just briefly wanted to let you know that we have Winter Weather Awareness Week starting next week. Begins on November 8th and runs through November 12th. And that's basically a week long in Minnesota and Wisconsin. And in Iowa, they just basically have a simple one-day Winter Weather Awareness Day, and that's on Tuesday, November 9th. And you're going to be hearing a lot about what you need to do as far as terms go, what a winter storm watch is, what a winter storm warning is. We'll be brushing up on what our weather winter terms are and what sort of advisories and what the issue and stuff like that. Winter storm watches are usually issued anywhere from 1 to 3 days in advance, and we expect 6 inches or more. Winter weather advisories usually for 3 to 6 inches of snow or mixed precipitation. And if you don't take action, or caution sign exercise, it could become life-threatening. And then a winter storm warning is usually 6 inches or more in a 12-hour period, 8 inches or more in a 24-hour period. Combination of winds, precipitation types, everything else there. Ice storm warning, for example, is quarter inch or more of ice accumulation. So we're going to be hearing a lot about these winter weather terms next week, not only from the Weather Service here, but also probably a lot on the radio shows, and newspaper articles and TV as we try to bring everybody back into, remind them basically what these winter products mean, and so they're prepared during this upcoming winter of things to come. So that's a quick update as far as that's concerned. Some other things I'd like to touch on real quick. Again, we're going to have a Co-Cross training, as I said earlier. That's going to be over in Rochester on Tuesday, November 16th at 7 o'clock at the Heights Center, University Center of Rochester. It begins at 7 o'clock. We'll be going through all sorts of COCRAWs and doing a lot of training there. If you're in the area and just interested in what's going on, come on out. Tim would love to see you there as far as what's going on. Another thing that's coming up on Wednesday, November 17th, we're going to be doing Stuff the Bus. That is a thing, basically, it's a food drive sponsored by the La Crosse Spartans indoor football team and also the La Crosse radio group. So we're going to be participating like we were last year at this event, and that runs from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the La Crosse Center. And come on by, and you can meet several of us. We'll be out there throughout the day collecting food for the local food banks here, Wafer, and helping them out as we approach Thanksgiving and upcoming holiday seasons. And a lot of people out there are having problems out there, and we need to help out as much as we can. And that's one thing as far as the Weather Service says. We care about people out there. It's our way of getting out and meeting you and collecting food for a worthy cause. So if you've got some extra canned goods out there, please come out. That's Wednesday, November 17th at the La Crosse Center between 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. and drop off food. We also will be taking monetary donations, too, to help with the food bank there. And also if you ever come to the food bank here at Wafer, occasionally we're out there, too, as far as helping out there. So it's just part of our office caring back to the community and helping out. So just wanted to bring that up a little bit. So I'd like to bring this live No Weather Radio show to an end. 8 o'clock is rapidly approaching here. If you've got any suggestions as far as future talks that you'd like to hear, future topics, please let us know. Just drop me a line. My email address is jff.byne@noaa.gov. Drop me any comments, questions, any improvements you can do with the show. I'll try and do it. Maybe there's some sort of format we could do away from No Other Radio inside of it or whatever. We'd be interested in hearing some of your comments and suggestions as far as what we can do. So I appreciate those who tuned in and listened to us tonight, those who are on the web, who are listening to the live streams. I'm glad to see you out there. And we hopefully will do a couple more of these next year. And maybe we'll do one early January summary of the 2010 year. Maybe talk a little bit about the new climate normals coming up. Those are just a few topics that seem to come to mind right now. Who knows, maybe we'll be talking about a couple winter storms by then as far as what's going on there. So, but if you got any suggestions or whatever, I'd be glad to hear it. Even some questions, gladly answer them. So I'm going to sign off for right now. Let you go back to your live radio program. I mean, go back to the regular programming. And thanks again for those who tuned in.